for those of you who are here, presumably you're here to hear Jatila Vanderveen, who's been, as I say, working with Phil Lubin, who is a cosmic microwave background experimentalist here at UCSB. And they have been working on a project, and I believe Jatila has some handouts as well, on ways to use a program called CMBFast to actually allow you to play with these spectra that Martin was showing and understand where they come from. So we thought it'd be nice for Jatila to spend 15 minutes talking you through it. So here she is.
Thank you. Okay. So I'll start with a few little disclaimers. First of all, this is an article that appeared in The Physics Teacher in December 98. So the stuff in there is all true, but that was before Boomerang, before Dossie or Daisy, before some of the more recent results. So some of the stuff that you would read in there is a bit outdated in the sense that the standard cosmological model has changed radically in the last couple of years. So that's the first disclaimer. The second disclaimer is not really a disclaimer, just sort of human interest. I was really excited when I heard that Lawrence was coming to the ITP because I've, of course, heard of him for many, many years. And he's the only person I've ever heard of that has the same last name as I do, which sounds odd because Vanderveen is actually a married name. My maiden name is Krauss also, although we spell it differently. And I don't think we're related, although we haven't found out, maybe distant past, way back somewhere. Okay, so with that in mind, what I offered to do here was to share with you all, because you're teaching, and that's what I do here, is I teach. And I spent 10 years teaching high school physics, and also working here on research. And this is something that you can take back with you. It's online, and you can use it to model with your students. And it looks really complicated, but as Martin was saying, it's really actually very classical physics at the CMB. It's not string theory. It's not particle physics. It's waves. And if you teach spectra, you can teach this. It's just extension from one dimension on a string to three dimensions. And I actually used it with Astro 2 students. We have a course here, Astro 2, History of the Universe. And so it's a basic cosmology course, and these are non-science majors, non-math people, but they could do it. And I'll show you some of the results of their work. And I've been working with Phil Lubin for like 12 years on various different projects. Okay, so the title is Modeling the Cosmic Microwave Background, a Hands-On Approach, or a Final Project, Play Major Deity. Okay, so just a quick rehash of what was talked about this morning, because I wrote this in a vacuum not knowing what they were going to talk about. Why teach about the CMB? Well, it's in the news. Okay, so people hear about it. Your students will hear about it. And it's the oldest electromagnetic radiation that we can observe. And this is kind of a cartoon that shows that sort of bubble that we live in, where this is the last scattering surface at a redshift of about 1,000. Which means that the universe has stretched by a factor of 1,000 since the light left that space. So by understanding the CMB power spectrum, we can distinguish between models of the physics of the very early universe. A few years ago, just maybe about 5 years ago, there was a huge debate between whether these defects or these small-scale anisotropy were due to random density fluctuations or defects in the fabric of space-time. And everybody was waiting for the results to show that that model has been ruled out, that we now are, you know, one of the test for inflation is that the spectrum of the CMB supports these kind of random density fluctuations. Okay, so the power spectrum of the CMB contains clues about the physical processes that were taking place before even, or during that time and before. And that by understanding the CMB power spectrum, we can get a handle on things like value of the Hubble constant, when the universe reionized. So here's kind of like the picture of pre-CMB. The universe was this opaque plasma, this very dense, like you couldn't see through it, just like you can't see through the sun. And then suddenly, or in a very small time scale that we don't really know how long, but a small short time, where's the mouse? Come on, mouse, there we are. The universe became neutral hydrogen, and the CMB photons could stream freely. But there was a period that we call the Dark Ages when, come on now, when there were no stars yet. Yet at some point, the universe was heated up to where the thin interstellar medium is actually ionized, and the gases between galaxies and clusters of galaxies are ionized. So at what point did that happen? And what percent of the universe is made up of normal stuff, like us, dark matter, and this dark energy or cosmological constant that we have no idea of? So all of that is contained in the power spectrum. And as was mentioned this morning, this picture that's now everywhere, is the universe flat, closed, or open? And CMB shows that most likely it's flat. Okay, so what is a power spectrum? Well, when I do this with students, I get out all the physics equipment. Okay, poltergeist. Yeah, that was BK.
Reionization. We can see it again.
Yeah. Okay. I get all the stuff about strings and vibrating, you know, standing waves on strings, and get out music and microphones and show the wiggles on the oscilloscope and talk about a power spectrum and what it's like using the analogy of sound, which they can understand. And then it's simply you take that analogy and you extend it to three dimensions. And it's this three-dimensional wiggles that are frozen in space and in time all around us. And so you can explain to them pretty easily, and they can make that leap of faith from one dimension to three. And that the smaller and smaller scales that you look at give you the higher frequencies of wiggles, and they can see that in one dimension, so you can explain, well, 1 degree is a small patch on the sky with small scale fluctuations. And so you can, if you want to, if you get to a point where you want to teach about series expansions, you can teach that this is actually a spherical harmonic series, and the first order term in this sum of sines and cosines in three dimensions is the temperature of the universe, the background temperature, what we call the monopole term. And it's this uniform 2.726 Kelvin temperature that's uniform out to a few parts in like 10 to the fifth. Then, and it corresponds to a temperature of roughly 3 Kelvins. Then the next order term is the dipole term, which, as was explained earlier, is not cosmological at all. It's a consequence of our motion through the CMB photons, and we see a contraction in the direction we're moving and an expansion, a small stretching in the direction from which we're moving. So you can actually look out in the sky. Well, this is something you can show your students. This is kind of in the direction of Virgo, where our motion is, and you can find it in the sky and say, well, the CMB is a little bit warmer in that direction because that's the direction we're moving in. And then the next term we call the quadrupole term, etc. And you, this is way out on this part, way, way out here on the flat part. The size of the fluctuations depends on the angular resolution. So the smaller the fluctuations, the smaller the angular resolution. That's why, you know, the 1 degree is about here, where this first peak is, and then you go down and down, and this is roughly the ratio. The rough, approximately, the angular size goes as pi over L, where L is the order number in this series. And power is plotted over here. And so the bulk of the information, the greatest amount of power, as this biggest peak happens to be at an angular scale of about 1 degree. This is a model. This is not, we don't have the whole sky mapped yet, but this is what we hope that map is going to bring back. This is a simulation. Okay, so we have this code, CMBFAST, that was actually written by two people, Otto Seljak and Matias Aldarriaga, when they were graduate students. I think they were at MIT at the time. Now they're at different places. And it's actually on the web. And it's what everybody uses, all the theorists use to do their models. So all of the wiggles that you saw this morning, they use this code. It's a Fortran code that is available for anybody to download. But what we have done here is we have that now in an EXE format. So it To Macintosh people, I apologize. I don't know how to use a Macintosh. But I imagine if you know how to run Fortran and you can compile it on a Macintosh, you can get it from their website and compile it yourself. But we have it available here for the PC, and it's a standalone form, and you can use it with your students to run all these models yourself. And it's the very same software that's used by all the experts. And this is what I'm going to go through this first, and then I'll show you on the internet. This is what the page looks like, and I've got here a set of activities which are free to modify, in which you can download the software and have your students go through the actual exercises. And this is the URL for it, which I'll show you. After I do this, I'll link to it. And so we did this. So here are some examples of student work where they actually got a chance to play with this, and they went every week to the computer labs on campus and they worked with different models. And of course this was in conjunction with the cosmology course, but how would it be used in high school? I can think of several ways. If you teach AP Physics and you want to know what to do after they've taken the exam and you've got 4 or 6 weeks left to school, I taught AP Physics for a long time and I didn't have this ready at that time, but I used to do cosmology type stuff with them. So it's a good like month-long project that they can do. You can give it to students as independent study, or if you're teaching an astronomy class in high school, you can do sort of a hand-waving approach to it and at least have them do the modeling. And so what they do in this software is you put in all the cosmological parameters. So students can study the effect on the spectrum, look at what is published, and then study the effect of what would it be like if you changed one parameter. So here's they're looking at the Hubble constant, H0, and changing it from 50 kilometers per second per megaparsec, which was the standard model about 10 years ago, to the current value somewhere around 70. And they can see how those lumps, how those that first peak and the second peak, those compressions and rarefactions, how they would change in height and also in their position. And here's another one. These are actual student work. The way they do this is they create the file, they take it into Excel and they graph it. And then they just used PowerPoint to make these slides and they turn their work in like that. So here's a student who's keeping H0 as the current best estimate of 70 and changing the various different proportions of baryonic, dark, and this dark energy, or lambda. And okay, here they are changing all the difference. You can see how these shapes change. And they can also, you can put into it the redshift at which the universe might have reionized and what percent. So they're investigating also the effects of reionization of the universe on what we see in the power spectrum by inputting those numbers. So Z is redshift and Xe is the fraction or the percent reionization that you would have expected at a certain time. So then they do this all quarter, and then for a final project they use all the information that they've gotten in class to create a spectrum that most closely resembles what the best estimate is, and then they get a chance to play major deity and create their own universe. 5 minutes, okay. And then they put in different parameters and they have to say, well, how would the universe be different if it is the way you say it is? What would we see now? How far apart would the galaxies be? Would there be life here? And they get a chance to write a paper about that and be very creative. So here are just some of their predictions. And here's where you can download all of that yourself. And so I'll go there right now because here, away with the PowerPoint. And oh, here's what it looks like. Let me show you first where you can find this. And it's, you can get to it through the physics department, but here's the URL directly. You have to put the tilde. Just www.physics.ucsb.edu/Jatila, that's me, astro2, and cmbfast.html. And You can find me, if you want, I'm just jatila@physics.ucsb.edu. If you have any questions, email me and I'll write back and send you the URL directly. And this page is complete with examples, and it's a very slow old computer, but examples to read. Here are those data points where you can draw that curve right through those data points. And so the assignments are on here, and then there's you can download all the software that you need, the program, and then the data files for the Bessel functions that you need. And is that a time signal? Documentation that explains it all to students in a way they can understand it, what each parameter means that they're trying to input. And here's what it looks like when you want to run it. It just runs interactively. So I think we're running out of time, but I'll put this up at the back, and if you want to come in and play with it, this is what we have to offer you to take back with you. Questions?
Yes.
You have 1 minute left.
We are a little short in time, but what I'm going to ask is, yeah, if there are any general questions now, and then of course Jatila will be here during the break, and you can talk some more and get some more information. We wanted to give you a chance to see what there is here. Obviously, not enough to explain all the details. Are there any sort of urgent questions for the moment? Okay. Now you know what Jatila looks like, and so at the break you can ask information from her. And again, there's also some material you can pick up from her and from the front here.
So before we start the afternoon session, I wanted to tell you all that during this next talk, we're doing an experiment. And what we're doing is broadcasting live this session, and maybe the next one, but this one, to a group of high school teachers in Hawaii. So the room is twice as big, and there are a bunch of teachers in Hawaii who you can actually, or you can, what do you mean? So they're over there. Who's that? Oh, that's and so this group in Hawaii, we're taking advantage of some of the new facilities we're developing at the KITP that will allow us to connect live to various scientific audiences in other places. We're planning this as part of our standard scientific programs, but also it has possible applications to these conferences. And this is the first experiment. There they are. If you look back, you see a bunch of teachers there. And one of the things I want you to they're all in Hawaiian uniform. There you are. So they can hear us and hear the lecture, and they will be able to participate in the Q&A session at the end of the talk. And I want you just to think about this the next hour or two. And during the town meeting, one of the questions I'll be asking is how we might use this developing technology to expand the reach of these conferences. And you might think about how you could help us do that throughout the United States. So let me turn over the mic to
me.
Lawrence?
This
okay.
Is the conclusion of my talk, by the way.
Okay. Good. Well, while Dan is getting his signal on, hopefully I don't have to reboot. Let's see. There are a few things I wanted to say. First, some people during lunch had asked about one thing we didn't do, perhaps should have, I didn't think about it at the time, gave some reading list or something like that. I understand the last time around there were some given out promoting various books. And so anyway, There are various readings. One thing that you should know, which is kind of timely, is this month, Scientific American has just come out with a special issue on cosmology, which is a compilation of articles over the last couple of years. And so I understand it's in the bookstores. And that's certainly one resource that you might turn to. There's also something I will say also, I won't hawk my books, but there is a, with Glenn Starkman, who some of you sat with at lunch, prepared earlier for the American Association of Physics Teachers, a book, a program of teaching cosmology for high school teachers. And you may look at, it's a program, a workshop we developed, and it's pretty dense, but I'd certainly be happy if any of you looked at that and got that from the American Association of Physics Teachers, and at least let me know if it was at all useful for you. Hopefully, we now have all the technology. Okay. And then.